Greetings and welcome to the Beacon Broadcast from Beacon Baptist Church on Kirkpatrick Road in Burlington, North Carolina. The Beacon Broadcast is supported in part by the gifts of faithful listeners. If you'd like to correspond with Pastor Barkman and the Beacon Broadcast, or if you wish to support this radio ministry, write to the Beacon Broadcast, Post Office Box 159, Alamance, North Carolina, 27201. The Beacon Broadcast, Post Office Box 159, Alamance, North Carolina, 27201. Now with today's message from God's Word, here is Pastor Greg Barkman.
We've come to the part of Romans chapter 9 where Paul is dealing with two of the most common human objections to the teaching of God's sovereignty and salvation, namely the doctrine of unconditional election. And he answers the first one in two different ways, actually. And the first answer is in verses 15 and 16. Now, the objection is stated in verse 14, "What shall we say then? Is there unrighteousness with God?" In other words, this doesn't seem just. This doesn't seem fair. Doesn't this make God unrighteous? And his answer is absolutely not. And then he says in verse 15, "For he," that is God, "says to Moses, I will have mercy on whomever I will have mercy, and I will have compassion on whomever I will have compassion. So then," verse 16, "is not of him who wills, nor of him who runs, but of God who shows mercy." So first he quotes from the Old Testament, the book of Exodus, and gives us this declaration of God that basically emphatically asserts his sovereign right to extend mercy to whoever he chooses, that he's not bound to distribute his mercy in a way that men would dictate or would be acceptable to men, that mercy, grace, loving kindness, whatever you want to call it, is a gift. Gifts, by their nature, are not obligations. If they're obligations, they're something other than a gift, but a gift is something that is given freely without compulsion, without obligation. It's not something that I'm obligated to do, but it's something that I choose to do. And God is just simply asserting his right to freely extend mercy to those that he chooses to extend mercy to. We would not be outraged if a millionaire said, "I'm going to give college scholarships to the following 15 people." And he picked 15 people out of a class of 100 and said, "I'm going to give college scholarships to these 15. Most people would commend him for a wonderful act of generosity. Very few would say, "Well, if you give it to the 15, you've got to give it to the 100. What about the other 85? Well, we recognize that nobody has a claim on it. He wasn't obligated to give it to anybody. To choose to give college scholarships to 15 is an act of exceeding generosity and kindness. And we applaud him for that. And we don't berate him for not doing more. At least most people wouldn't. And if anyone does, others would generally recognize that as being exceedingly ungrateful and exceedingly unfair to the millionaire. Why does giving to one obligate to give to all? He's free to give as he pleases. Sometimes we see these rich people and the way they give, and I'm not always pleased with the institutions and organizations which they choose to give their riches to. And sometimes I question their wisdom. Why did that person give X number of million dollars to that organization? It seems to me that that organization is undermining the very foundation that allowed that person to earn all their money. But after all, it's their money and they're free to do with it as they choose. I'm free to give to what I choose to give to. If I choose to give the bulk of my charitable giving to my church, which is what I do, that's my right, isn't it? And nobody has a right to say, well, if you're going to give X number of dollars to your church, you've also got to give X number of dollars to the Red Cross. Well, why? Some people prefer the Red Cross. Some people might give all of their charitable giving to the Red Cross. But I happen to put a higher priority upon the work of the gospel and upon my church, and so I give nearly all of my charitable giving to my church. I do a little bit to some other areas, usually some Christian schools and various other projects as they might come up throughout the year that I feel a special kinship with, but basically I choose to do that. That's my right. That's my right. Now, why would we claim that right for ourselves and deny it to God is the point. Now, let's go back for a moment and examine this passage in Exodus chapter 33, because I think looking at that is going to seal the issue even more in our minds. So back to Exodus chapter 33, where the statement comes from, that I will have mercy on whom I will have mercy. Now, here's the point. What's going on in Exodus is that Moses went up upon the mountain to receive the Ten Commandments, and while he was up there, the people down below made the golden calf. And so God told Moses to leave Sinai and to go down and see what the people were doing. And as he did so, he came down and was exceedingly upset, and he broke the tablets which God had given to him. That's all in the background here. And then Moses said to the Lord, see, you say to me, bring up this people, but you have not let me know whom you will send with me. Yet you have said, I know you by name, and you have found grace in my sight. Now, therefore, I pray. I'm reading at verse 12 of chapter 33. Now, therefore, I pray, if I have found grace in your sight, show me your way, that I may know you, and that I may find grace in your sight, and consider that this nation is your people. And he said, my presence will go up with you, and I will give you rest. Then he, that is Moses, said to him, if your presence does not go with us, do not bring us up from here. For how will it be known that your people and I have found grace in your sight, except you go with us? So we will be separate, your people and I, from all the peoples who are upon the face of the earth. So the Lord said to Moses, I will also do this thing that you have spoken, for you have found grace in my sight, and I know you by name. And he, and now we're getting to the heart of it here, verse 18, he, Moses, said, please show me your glory. This is where Moses is asking God to show him his glory. Now, what is his glory? There is a visible glory, a Shekinah glory. And that certainly must be included, but there's more than that. Show me your glory. Show me your majesty. Show me your character. Show me who you are. Show me more of who you are, is really what Moses was saying here. Then he, that is God, said, I will make all my goodness pass before you, and I will proclaim the name of the Lord before you. I will be gracious to whom I will be gracious, and I will have compassion on whom I will have compassion. Now, there's that statement that is quoted in Romans chapter 9. But notice the setting. This suddenly highlights it all the more, because here is Moses asking God to show him what makes him glorious, to reveal more of the essence of God to Moses. And here's what God says. This is who I am. This is the essence of who I am. And he makes this statement. I will be gracious to whom I will be gracious, and I will have compassion on whom I will have compassion. In other words, the absolute sovereignty of God is the very essence of his glory. Isn't that what this is saying when you look at it in its context? The very essence, the sovereignty of God is the very essence of his glory. Do you understand why I'm taking so much time with this in Romans chapter 9? There are several reasons for it. One is because it is such a neglected chapter, and therefore it needs a great deal of attention to make up for the neglect that is generally the way it's generally treated. There's a lot of misunderstanding, and I want to help people have to overcome their misunderstandings. But I'm convinced that this is at the very heart of who God is and a proper understanding of God and a proper relationship with God. And if we get this wrong, we don't understand God. And when we get this wrong, we don't relate to God the way that we ought to relate to Him. To misconstrue the sovereignty of God, to weaken it in some way, is to misrepresent God and is to lower Him. It is to dishonor Him. It is to take away from His glory. This is the very essence of the glory of God. And what is our purpose upon earth as God's created beings? It is to bring glory to God, to highlight who He is and what makes Him glorious. That's what our responsibility is. And if at the very heart of that is His absolute sovereignty, yes, His sovereignty and salvation, and we deny that, then we have denied God His glory, as He has defined His glory, as He has revealed His glory. So I read it to you again, Exodus 33:18, and He, that is Moses, said, "Please show me your glory." Then He, that is God, said, "I will make all my goodness pass before you, and I will proclaim the name of the Lord before you. I will be gracious to whom I will be gracious, and I will have compassion on whom I will have compassion." That God characterizes as His goodness. Here we are complaining about it, as if there's something wrong with it, something sinful about it, something evil about it. That's not fair. God says, "This is my goodness, that I would show mercy on anyone, that I would show compassion on anyone." But you're not going to tie me up and somehow obligate me that if I show mercy to anybody, I've got to show the same mercy to everybody. That's not your right, creature. That's not your right, man. I have sovereign rights, and I will assert them. I will protect them. I will defend them. I will declare them, says God. And I reserve emphatically the right to dispense my gifts, my kindness, my mercy, my grace, as I choose, when I choose, to whom I choose. I am a sovereign God, and that is my right, and I will assert that right. I will be gracious to whom I will be gracious, and I will have compassion on whom I will have compassion. Do you see why this is so important? I think one reason why people are afraid to embrace the truth of God's sovereignty and salvation is because I think many people recognize that in doing this, they really are changing drastically their understanding of who God is. Suddenly, God is a very different being than what they conceived Him to be. And that's not comfortable, to realize that God, as you have known Him and served Him and worshipped Him, is significantly different than what you thought He was. But it all boils down to this. Do you want to worship a God that you have misconstrued? Do you want to worship a God that is partly true, but is partly false? That is your understanding of Him, your concept of Him. Do you want to worship a God that in the true aspects you're worshiping the true God, but in other aspects you're actually worshiping a false God, an idol? Or do you want to worship the one true God as He truly is, as He reveals Himself to be? And if what He reveals Himself to be is different from what you thought Him to be, then what should you do? Change! May God help us to do it. Until next week, Greg Barkman saying good day. May God give you His eternal peace.